Chapter 6. Dale Nichols, special assistant to the president, puffed on his pipe and peered over his old-style reading spectacles as Raymond Jordan entered his office. Jordan managed a smile despite the sickly sweet tobacco fumes that hung in the office like smog under an inversion layer. "Good afternoon, Dale." "Still raining?" asked Nichols. Mostly turned to drizzle. Jordan noted that Nichols was under pressure. The protector of the presidential realm was a class operator, but the thicket of coffee-brown hair looked like a hayfield in a crosswind. The eyes darted more than usual, and there were tension lines in the face Jordan had never seen before. "The president and the vice president are waiting," said Nichols quickly. "They're most anxious to hear an update on the Pacific blast." "I have the latest report," Jordan said reassuringly. Though he was one of the five most powerful men in official Washington, Jordan was not known to the general public. Nor was he familiar to most bureaucrats or politicians. As director of Central Intelligence, Jordan headed the National Security Service and reported directly to the president. He lived in the spectral world of espionage and intelligence, and there were very few outsiders who were aware of the disasters and tragedies that he and his agents had saved the American people from. Jordan did not strike a stranger as a man with a brilliant intellect who possessed a photographic memory and was conversant in seven languages. He seemed as ordinary-looking as his men and women in the field. Medium height, late 50s, healthy head of silver-gray hair, solid frame with slight paunch, kindly oak-brown eyes. A faithful husband to his wife of 37 years, they had twin daughters in college, both studying marine biology. The president and vice president were engaged in quiet conversation as Nichols ushered Jordan into the Oval Office. They turned instantly and faced Jordan, who observed that they were as uptight as the president's special assistant. "Thank you for coming, Ray," said the president without fanfare, nervously motioning to a green couch beneath a portrait of Andrew Jackson. "Please sit down and tell us what in hell is going on out in the Pacific." Jordan always found himself amused by the painful uneasiness that gripped politicians during an impending crisis. No elected official had the seasoned toughness and experience of career men such as the Director of Central Intelligence, and they could never bring themselves to respect or accept the immense power Jordan and his counterparts possessed to control and orchestrate international events. Jordan nodded to the president, who towered a good head above him, and sat down. Calmly, with what seemed to the others agonizing slowness, he set a large leather accountant-style briefcase on the floor and spread it open. Then he pulled out a file as a reference. "Do we have a situation?" the president asked impatiently, using the formal watchword for an imminent threat to the civilian population, such as a nuclear attack.
"Yes, sir, unfortunately we do."
"What are we looking at?" Jordan glanced at the report purely for effect. He'd already memorized the entire 30 pages. At precisely 11:54 hours, an explosion of great force took place in the North Pacific, approximately 900 kilometers northeast of Midway Island. One of our Pyramider spy satellites recorded the flash and atmospheric disturbance with cameras and recorded the shock wave from clandestine hydrophonic buoys. The data was transmitted directly to the National Security Agency, where it was analyzed.
This was followed by readings from seismographic array stations linked to NORAD, who in turn relayed the information to CIA technicians at Langley. And the conclusion, the president pushed. "They agreed the explosion was nuclear," he said calmly. "Nothing else could be that massive." Except for Jordan, who seemed as relaxed as if he was watching a soap opera on television, the expressions of the other three men in the Oval Office looked positively grim at the abhorrent thought that was finally thrown out in the open. "Are we on DEFCOM alert?" inquired the president, referring to the scale of nuclear readiness. Jordan nodded. "I've taken the liberty of ordering NORAD to go immediately to a DEFCOM 3 alert with standby and staging for DEFCOM 2, depending on the reaction by the Soviets." Nichols stared at Jordan. "Are we airborne?" "A Casper SR-90 recon aircraft took off from Edwards Air Force Base 20 minutes ago to verify and collect additional data." "Are we certain the shockwave was caused by a nuclear explosion?" asked the vice president, a man in his early 40s who had spent only 6 years in Congress before being tapped for the number two job. The consummate politician, he was out of his depth on intelligence gathering. "It might have been an underwater earthquake or volcanic eruption." Jordan shook his head. "The seismographic recording showed a sharp pulse associated with nuclear detonations. The reflection from an earthquake goes back and forth for a longer length of time. Computer enhancement confirms that fact. We should have a good idea of the energy in kilotons after the Casper collects atmospheric radiation samples. Any guesses? Until all the data is in, the best guess is between 10 and 20 kilotons. Enough to level Chicago, Nichols murmured. The president was afraid to ask the next question, and he hesitated. Could it have been one of our own nuclear submarines that blew up? The chief of naval operations assures me none of our vessels were within 500 kilometers of the area. A Russian, maybe? No, Jordan replied. I've notified my USSR counterpart, Nikolai Golanov. He swore all Soviet nuclear surface ships and submarines in the Pacific are accounted for, and quite naturally blamed us for the event. Though I'm 100% sure he and his people know better, they won't admit they're in the dark as much as we are. I'm not familiar with the name, said the vice president. Is he KGB? Golanov is the Directorate of Foreign and State Security for the Politburo, Jordan explained patiently. He could be lying, offered Nichols. Jordan shot him a hard look. Nikolai and I go back 26 years together. We may have danced and shined, but we never lied to one another. If we aren't responsible, and neither are the Soviets, mused the president, his voice gone strangely soft, then who is? At least 10 other nations have the bomb, said Nichols. Any one of them could have run a nuclear bomb test. Not likely, answered Jordan. You can't keep the preparations a secret from global bloc and Western intelligence gathering. I suspect we're going to find it was an accident, a nuclear device that was never meant to go off. The president looked thoughtful for a moment, and then he asked, Do we know the nationality of the ships in the blast area? All the details aren't in yet, but it appears that 3 vessels were involved, or at least innocent bystanders. A Norwegian passenger cargo liner, a Japanese auto carrier, and a British oceanographic ship that was conducting a deep-bottom survey. There must have been casualties. Photos from our satellite before and after the event showed that all 3 ships vanished and were presumed sunk during or immediately after the blast. Human survivability is very doubtful. If the fireball and shockwave didn't get them, the heavy radiation will in a very short time. I take it a rescue mission is planned, said the vice president. Naval units from Guam and Midway have been ordered to the site. The president stared at the carpet steadily as if seeing something. I can't believe the British were secretly conducting a bomb test without notifying us. The Prime Minister would have never gone behind my back. Certainly not the Norwegians, said the vice president firmly. The president's face made a mystified expression. Nor the Japanese. There's no evidence they ever built a nuclear bomb. The device might have been stolen, suggested Nichols, and clandestinely transported by the unsuspecting Norwegians or Japanese. Jordan shrugged offhandedly. I don't think it was stolen. I'm willing to bet a month's pay an investigation will prove it was deliberately being carried to a scheduled destination. Which was? One of 2 California ports. They all looked at Jordan in cold speculation, the enormity of the whole thing growing in their minds. The Divine Star was bound from Kobe to Los Angeles with over 7,000 Murmoto automobiles, Jordan continued. The Narvik, carrying 130 passengers and a mixed cargo of Korean shoes, computers, and kitchen appliances, sailed from Busan for San Francisco. The president grinned mildly. That should put a small dent in the trade deficit. Good God, muttered the vice president, shaking his head. A frightening thought. A foreign ship smuggling a nuclear bomb into the United States. What do you recommend, Ray? Demanded the president. We dispatch field teams immediately, preferably Navy deep-sea salvage vessels, to survey the sunken ships and learn which ship was transporting the bomb. The president and Nichols exchanged knowing glances. Then the president stared at Jordan. I think Admiral Sandecker and his ocean engineering people at NUMA are better suited for a deep-water operation. I leave it to you, Ray, to brief him. If I may respectfully disagree, Mr. President, we can keep a tighter security lid on the event with the Navy. The president gave Jordan a smug look. I understand your concern, but trust me. The National Underwater and Marine Agency can do the job without a news leak. Jordan rose from the couch, professionally annoyed that the president knew something he didn't. He made a mental note to dig at his first opportunity. If Dale will alert the admiral, I'll leave for his office immediately. The president extended his hand. Thank you, Ray. You and your people have done a superb job in so short a time. Nichols accompanied Jordan as he left the Oval Office to head for the NUMA building. As soon as they were in the hallway, Nichols asked in a low voice, "Just between you and me and the furniture, who do you think is behind the bomb smuggling?" Jordan thought for a moment and then replied in an even, disquieting tone, "We'll know the answer to that within the next 24 hours. The big question, the one that scares hell out of me, is why, and for what purpose?"